Festering Wounds, Hurting Souls, Loving Hearts, a Stargate Atlantis fanfiction by Tasmi, relationship John Rodney, rated teen. Woolsey breathed a sigh of relief as he watched AR-1 come through the gate relatively unscathed. Dirt covered every pore of their bodies, but thankfully Woolsey didn't see any blood. They were smiling and laughing, always a good sign. At first glance, all seemed well. Woolsey waved at them from above, and they each waved in return. Then he made his way down the stairs. He stopped short for a moment. Woolsey had learned to look out for the subtle signs. He noted McKay's thin lips, suggesting a feigned smile. McKay's eyes darted over to Shepard with a definite undertone of frustration and hurt. Shepard, for his part, seemed unaware of McKay's unease. This didn't surprise Woolsey, because for all Shepard knew and cared for McKay, he never seemed to notice the tension. It didn't come out often, but when it did, McKay's palpable hurt could be felt from across the room. Somehow none of his team seemed to recognize or acknowledge its presence. The few times they did, they seemed unconcerned or to feel it wasn't worth addressing. After all, when was McKay not upset about something? Woolsey knew better. Woolsey examined Shepard for evidence. His pockets weren't bulging with a hidden lemon, so that wasn't today's specific issue. Perhaps just words, then. Nothing tangible Woolsey could use to make his case. I take it that everything went well? Woolsey noted the way McKay's brow furrowed before Shepard said, It was a close call, but we made it through okay. Ronnie pulled another one of his last-second miracles. At this, McKay smiled again, right along with the rest, pretending to be okay once more. Yes, well, genius and all. Very well, then. Go get cleaned up, and we'll debrief in the morning. He caught McKay's eyes, silently telling him to stay. McKay rarely noticed nonverbal signals, but he knew Woolsey well enough by now to get the message. You coming? Shepard called back. Go ahead, I'll catch up. As AR-1 disappeared, Woolsey said, When you're done showering and cleared by medical, please report back to my office. Oh, great. What did my scientist blow up? Or wait, is it me? What did I do now? McKay asked. Nothing, I assure you. I just need to check in with you about a few details. Woolsey had started collecting evidence months ago. Now he felt certain about the root of the problem, but unsure how best to proceed. Undoubtedly, McKay would deny he'd been upset at all, pointing to how his team was his family and Shepard was his best friend. He would become defensive and avoid the conversation, but Woolsey knew he couldn't keep letting this go. These types of wounds had a way of festering. Woolsey stepped into his office, closing the glass doors behind him. He rehearsed what to say, knowing he couldn't get this wrong or he'd be shut out, possibly for good. Sometimes the deepest hurts come from those we love the most, he told the empty room. The hardest part is that they often don't know they're hurting us. That sounded good, but perhaps too strong. Maybe he could use that somewhere near the middle, when McKay started pretending he didn't care and he didn't need nor want Woolsey to interfere. I know you care very much for Colonel Shepard, but that doesn't mean you should let him insult you. That sounded a little better, but he doubted McKay would respond well. No, McKay was a man of science. He examined evidence and determined the best course of action based on extensive invisible flowcharts in his mind. Woolsey needed a carefully laid out theorem and proof if he wanted McKay to hear him out. I'm here. What is this about? McKay asked without preamble. Please close the door and have a seat. At this, McKay froze for a moment, tilting his head in worry. Woolsey knew what he was thinking. It was rare for Woolsey ever to close the door. So I did do something wrong then. What was it this time? Please tell me I don't have another Kavanaugh on my hands, launching every possible complaint known to mankind. With the glass door closed, he took the offered seat, crossing his arms around his chest, already defensive. Not the best start. Not at all, but I did want to check in with you. Well, I'm here. Check in already. It's late, and I still have a lot of work to do before I can crash. Hear me out. I'm going to present you some of my findings. Together, we can conclude what to do about them. All I ask is that you relax and listen with an open mind. That sounds ominous. You sure we can't do this tomorrow? I need at least two more showers to get that awful cracked mud feel off my skin. Is that why you were upset with Colonel Shepard? Did he dismiss once again that you were sensory overloaded? What? Wait, is this talk about Shepard? Now I know you're wasting my time. Whatever this is, just don't, okay? His shoulders tensing, McKay stood and made for the door. Sit down, Woolsey said gently, but definitely as a command. McKay did as asked, but Woolsey could see the tension building in him. This was definitely not the best start, but maybe the only way to get through. Direct, to the point. I believe Colonel Shepard gave Colonel Mitchell a lemon during his visit to Atlantis a few years ago. Rodney's eye twitched only for a moment. Yes, he can be an ass sometimes, but it's not a problem. You are allergic to citrus. I believe the latest allergy test downgraded it from level 4 to a level 2 allergy, but allergic all the same. That's just Shepard thinking he's being funny. He knows imminent danger helps me work faster. Yes, I've heard that argument before. I can't say I find it particularly compelling. I'm sorry, what exactly is this meeting about? I wasn't kidding about having work to do, and frankly, everything you've talked about is none of your business. On the contrary, the well-being of my expedition members is very much part of my official duties. Now, last week in the cafeteria, I heard your team commenting on your food choices. They made several comments about your weight. Noticing McKay was going to try and bolt again, Woolsey talked fast, leaning forward, determined to present the rest of his proof before McKay could leave. When you complain about any kind of sensory overwhelm, from itching, loud sounds, etc., they always dismiss your discomfort. Don't you find that problematic? Can you really tell me it doesn't hurt? I have a lot of annoying quirks. It's part of what makes me me. So what happened on your last mission? Nothing. It was successful. I saved everyone, just like I always do, and then we came home. You came back angry at Colonel Shepard. Oh, please, are you blind now? We were laughing and smiling. That's hardly... Were you? Were you? Really? He didn't miss the way McKay gulped, leaning back against the chair while he breathed heavily, his eyes darting back and forth. Again, what is this meeting about? If you're asking me to complain about my team, I'm not going to do that. We rib each other. It's what teammates do. It's not a problem. So you're okay when they insult your weight or make fun of how hard things are for you, when they make offhand comments about how you're off your game, or when they wave lemons in your face? McKay shook lightly, glancing at the floor. I admit it bothers me a bit, but... And you told the Colonel as much. I've heard you. Yes, but... But what? This is unacceptable behavior. It should have stopped the first time you told him that it was a problem. I'm really not comfortable with whatever this conversation is we're having. Can I ask for this to stop? Or did you decide to join my team in being jerks, huh? Ronnie stood up and began pacing, his arms flailing in typical McKay annoyance. I get this enough from them without having to relive it with you. I get to say what's a problem, and I say this isn't one, so back off. Woolsey noted Ronnie sweating, wringing his hands together, glaring back, all while slightly shaking. Hear me out first, please. I'm guessing you've spent most of your life being told that you're not allowed to feel the way you feel or be the way you are. I understand that you don't want to lodge any formal complaints. I'm not asking you to. What I'm saying is that we both know your psych profile. You experience the world differently than your team does. That doesn't mean you experience it wrongly, just differently. You deserve to be treated better, and you know it. You've always tried letting them know how you feel, but they haven't taken it seriously, correct? They protect me. When my claustrophobia kicked in last week, they cared for me and helped me through it. No judgment. They only make fun of me when it's not actually a serious issue. Serious to them, you mean? McKay looked up at this, meeting Woolsey's eyes as though being seen for the first time. But that understanding quickly dissipated as McKay became defensive once more. Shepard gets pissed at the kitchen so much as store citrus anywhere near the food I'm eating. Yes, they care a great deal for you, which is exactly why it's so much harder when they say or do hurtful things. Please, I'm not that thin-skinned. You should hear the people say things about you. It's not like I'm the only one here that's different. This isn't about me. Can I go now? This is a monumental waste of time. I would like to sit down with you and Colonel Shepard and act as mediator. Make sure he finally hears you out and actually listens. No, not happening. Absolutely not. Do you have any idea what a completely stupid, ludicrous idea that is? I know you would rather pretend everything is okay and just move on, but I can see how much this affects you. Shepard is your friend, and I believe he would want to know that you are actually hurt by all of this. Rodney paused, looking anywhere but at Woolsey. His shoulders drooped as his defenses lowered. It took a full minute before he answered. It's fine, really. It's how he is, and I've long since accepted that won't change. He no longer sounded angry, just resigned. It would be off the record, no paperwork, nothing official. He doesn't do feelings. He'd be awkward with me for weeks, and I really don't need that. Let me put it this way. It's my responsibility to make sure we are working as a cohesive whole. Setting aside my own feelings that you deserve better, I can't allow this to continue under my command. Colonel Shepard is not just your friend, he's your team leader, and that makes this all the more unacceptable. If you don't agree to mediation, I'm going to have to act in a more official capacity. Hold up. Are you saying if I don't agree, you'll what, reprimand Shepard? Against my own wishes? I'll give him a warning, yes. After a year of watching this interaction, I will not continue to stand idly by and pretend it isn't a festering problem. It must be addressed. I'm talking to you as a courtesy. You're going to force my hand here, on this. Shouldn't this be my choice? Woolsey paused, considering. Fair enough. Can you really sit there and tell me you don't want the comments to stop? If you can tell me that, honestly, then I'll let this go. Rodney paused, gazing at his hands as they wrung together nervously. I can't, he finally admitted. Then let me help you. I can play this however you want and follow your lead, but let's figure this out together. Fine, whatever. I'll talk to Shepard about it on my own again. If that doesn't work, then you can do your ridiculous mediation thing. Off the record. Agreed. Rodney didn't know what to make of his conversation with Woolsey. He felt equal parts seen and annoyed, and entirely sure the last thing he needed was to talk this out with Shepard. He'd spent a good 5 years avoiding the conversation, and for good reason. Shepard never meant any harm, and Rodney knew how to take things in stride. So he spent the next few days ignoring the situation until one point they were in crisis, working through some locked door puzzles with scientists trapped in a newly discovered lab. The very thing Rodney had said would happen, unsurprisingly, started to happen. Now they were well and completely screwed and unlikely to solve this tonight. Then Shepard acted like it was somehow all Rodney's fault that this had gone wrong, as though Rodney hadn't tried to warn him earlier, only for Shepard to shut him down as being pessimistic? Then Shepard had the audacity to say something about lemons to help McKay work faster and better. And that was it. The straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. Rodney flashed back to all the annoying comments about being off his game. He thought about his aching back and all the headaches he suffered whenever he worked ridiculously long shifts, and how everyone just rolled their eyes if he dared to mention he felt bad. Then he thought of John using lemons or threats to help him work faster, and how it was always all his fault if things didn't work out. But if he let anyone know what might go wrong, then he was seen as just complaining. He knew everyone wanted him to perform miracles, but they never allowed him to make mistakes. He'd missed whatever Shepard had said at that point, just sitting there frozen in thought, only coming back as Shepard waved his hand in Rodney's face. Earth to Rodney, you there? Rodney suddenly found himself on his feet, fuming and so completely, utterly done. Call Zelinka to fix it. I'm out. And then he just left. Locked doors and emergencies be damned, leaving a confused and concerned Shepard behind. Rodney wasn't sure where he was going next, only that it was as far away from Shepard as he could get. But Shepard was following him now, calling his name, and apparently catching up fast. Ronnie slipped into the transporter just in time to press a far-off destination and transport himself away. "Rodney, what the hell?" he heard Shepard say over the radio. Roddy ripped the radio off his ear, placing it in his pocket. Knowing Shepard might try to trace his transponder, Rodney had chosen some of the deeper areas of Atlantis where the sensors didn't reach. Eventually, John would find him, but for now, at least, he was alone. So instead, he paced the corridors, arms flailing, deciding what to say when Shepard finally arrived, wanting to know why Rodney had stormed off mid-job. Exhausted, with every bit of his body aching, Rodney finally took a seat, curling his legs into his chest. Leaving the job mid-emergency wasn't going to look great, but at least it wasn't life or death, and Slinka really could handle things well enough. Hadn't Woolsey told him just the other day he needed to delegate and trust his people more? Rodney didn't know how long he'd sat there before he heard footsteps and an audible sigh of relief. He heard Shepard say, "I found him. Stand by." A moment later, Shepard sat by his side, nudging slightly into him. "You gonna tell me what this is?" John asked.
"No."
"You okay?"
"Yes."
"You want to talk about it?"
"No."
"You know, one-word answers aren't exactly a reassuring sign from you."
"That's even worse."
Zelinka says it'll take a good 10 hours before he can get through the door. "I'm about 30 seconds away from calling Dr. Keller down here if you don't start talking."
"Or you could go away."
"I don't think I should do that. Do you realize we had half the city out looking for you? Seriously, you're freaking me out. What's going on?" Rodney groaned, finding himself not at all ready for this conversation. He buried his head deeply in his arms. Maybe if he ignored Shepard, he'd take the hint and disappear.
"Rodney," John prodded again, followed by silence. Then there was a click of the radio, followed by,
"Dr. Keller, we're outside Lab 42.
"Belay that, we're fine," Rodney said, having rapidly fastened his earpiece back on and joined the radio conversation.
"Rodney, are you sure?" Keller asked, sounding concerned and not at all certain.
"I'm sure." Then he clicked off his radio, placing it back in his pocket before fixing Shepard with an angry glare.
"Just because I don't want to talk to you doesn't mean I need to be poked and prodded."
"So it's about me?" Shepard asked. "You're pissed at me?"
"Obviously. And the fact it took you this long to realize it is just, you know, Woolsey was right about you, and I really hate that."
"Hold up. What did Woolsey say about me?"
Realizing he'd already said too much, Rodney gave one last angry glare before burying his head back into his arms, mumbling, "Go away."
"What did I do, McKay? Tell me. You're such an ass sometimes. Do you know that?"
"I do, actually. So how was I an ass today?"
"Go away," Rodney mumbled.
"I would, but I'm worried and you're not acting right."
Shepard nudged toward Rodney again, but this time Rodney scooted away from him.
"I'm fine."
"You stormed away mid-emergency, went radio silent, and hid in the depths of Atlantis. That's not fine."
"Go away."
"Look, you haven't slept in a while and you've only had power bars all day. You agree to eat something and go to sleep, and I'll get out of your hair until tomorrow morning. Deal?"
"Yeah, sure."
"Good. I'll walk you to the cafeteria just to be sure you've eaten, drop you off at your quarters, and then go."
"I don't need a babysitter."
"I don't know what you need right now, Rodney. I'm guessing you don't know either. Food and sleep. Those are my terms, or I'm escorting you straight to the infirmary."
"Fine. Whatever." Rodney pushed off from the wall to his feet and strode down the corridor with Shepard, who annoyingly kept up well enough to make it through the transporter door with him. In the cafeteria, he grabbed just enough food to satisfy Shepard, but not so much it would take more than a few minutes to scarf down. Then, sufficiently fed, he strode to his quarters and slipped inside without so much as an acknowledgement or goodbye in Shepard's direction. As it turned out, food did make him feel a little better, which was honestly annoying because it meant Shepard had been somewhat right about what he needed. He thought of not sleeping, if only despite Shepard,
but his body did ache and he was exhausted, so he fell onto his bed, fully clothed, and passed out without a moment's hesitation. Rodney wasn't at all surprised to find an email from Woolsey the next morning, nor was he surprised by its contents. Please report to my office immediately. There was also a long list of other messages. Raddick seemed both concerned and smug. Rodney, I don't know what happened with you yesterday. Are you okay? I'm around if you want to talk. The good news is I managed to get the door open quicker than expected and everyone is okay.
Great. Rodney was bound to hear about Zelenka's success for weeks.
Shepard had managed to make it to 0300 hours before emailing. Apparently, I fucked up and I have no idea how. I'm sorry for whatever it is I did to piss you off. Can we please talk about this? P.S. Heads up. Woolsey wants to talk to you. I'm guessing it's going to be one of those conversations, if you know what I mean. P.S.S. Are you sure you're okay? You didn't seem okay. Shepard wanting to talk was never a good sign. The guy treated feelings like he was being forced to eat the most disgusting worms dredged up from the muckiest swamp. Taylor wrote, I have heard that you might be in need of a friend. Perhaps you would like to meet for tea? Ronan wrote, Everyone's talking. Shepard's worried. So am I. Rodney answered none of them, choosing not to read the rest because what important things could they say anyway? It wasn't like any were headed impending doom, respond, ASAP, or anything. He spared a glance at his daily schedule. Apparently Woolsey had cleared it for not just the day, but the following 2 days as well. It was definitely going to be one of those conversations then. There were, however, a few new meetings added. A morning meeting with Woolsey marked ASAP, report immediately. 3 mandatory meetings scheduled with the shrink at 1100 hours, one a day, each day. Finally, a meeting at 1700 hours on the third day in the Atlantis conference room with only him, Woolsey, and Shepard invited. Rodney groaned. Woolsey wasn't exactly being subtle, was he? He could at least have waited until after they talked to schedule those meetings. Although Woolsey usually did everything with a purpose, which meant he wanted to give Rodney a heads up about exactly what to expect. Rodney inventoried everything Woolsey would want to discuss and began an invisible flowchart in his mind with possibilities and responses. First, he'd stormed out mid-emergency while his scientists were still trapped. That wasn't going to go over well no matter how Rodney spun it. The best plan was to just admit fault and hope for the best. Of course, Woolsey was bound to realize what had happened, which would immediately flow into the next problem. Woolsey would want to know if he'd talked to Shepard yet or not, and if not, why not? And he'd probably go on about how he couldn't just let it go because now it was affecting Rodney's actual work performance. At some point, the fact Rodney had gone radio silent would probably come up as well. There were a lot of protocols around radio use when on shift, and he imagined that Woolsey had probably tried to talk to him more than a few times on the comms. He definitely heard the PA a few times telling him to report to the control room immediately. Ignoring the PA was going to be a whole other conversation, along with having the city out looking for him. His flowchart completed as best as it could, Rodney slipped into the shower, deliberately taking as long as possible, allowing the hot water to soothe his still aching muscles and back. Sure, Woolsey had said to report immediately, but immediately was a relative term, right? The door chimed mid-rinse, but Rodney ignored it, checking with his mind that the door was indeed locked. He then stepped out of the shower, quickly dressed, and pointedly ignored the next chime. His radio chirped, and he considered ignoring that as well, but the last thing he needed was one more thing for Woolsey to add to his list of offenses. McKay here. Mr. Woolsey wants you to report to his office immediately, Chuck informed him. Really? I hadn't noticed. I'll tell him you're on your way. Rodney tapped off the radio, wishing he could delay longer. He was just grabbing his coat when the door chimed again, and despite still being locked, somehow it slid open a moment later to reveal a disheveled Shepard.
Normally, when a door is locked, it means go away, Rodney informed him. It's not an invitation to override it with your ridiculously powerful gene. And did you even sleep last night?
Scratch that. Obviously you didn't. You look like a mess. Your hair is somehow spikier than usual, and you were sending emails at 0300, and why are you smiling?
It's good to hear you talking again.
Oh, well, yes, I suppose I am. Anyway, I don't have time to get into it now. I have to go to an awesome fun meeting with Woolsey where it's going to be all sunshine and roses. Maybe it won't be so bad. Rodney rolled his eyes. Okay, yeah, it won't be great. Did you want something? I was hoping you were ready to talk about it. I obviously messed up big time, and I'd like to know how. Later, meeting, remember? I'll walk you. Probably for the best. I think Woolsey's about a step away from having a Marine escort me to his office just to make sure I get there. We could wait it out and find out. Just see how much you can push his buttons before you actually meet. By this point, they'd made it to the transporter, so Rodney didn't bother giving a response other than to press the button for the control room floor. As big as Atlantis was, the transporters made all distances unbearably short. Good for medical emergencies, terrible for delaying the inevitable. You'll be fine. We can have breakfast after, Shepard asked. It turned out the meeting went exactly as Rodney expected. Woolsey wasn't so much angry as concerned, but that also seemed worse. After several words about respecting protocol, taking care of oneself, and other such useless platitudes, Woolsey put him on a 3-day leave with orders to talk both to the shrink and to Shepard. Failing that, there was a mediation meeting scheduled at the end of the 3 days, all of which Rodney had already ascertained from reading his schedule. Meetings, as it turned out, really should always just be emails and not ridiculous wastes of time. By the time Rodney escaped, it was nearly 1,000 hours, and he headed out to the mess only to stop halfway and message John to meet him in his quarters instead. Maybe if Rodney just ripped this off like a band-aid, it wouldn't be as bad. One thing was for sure, he was not having this conversation in the open. Then realizing skipping breakfast probably wasn't the best course of action, he quickly stopped by the mess anyway, grabbing muffins and apple juice, ignoring the many curious gazes following him. Apparently, when half the city is sent to search for you, people get curious. It didn't help that Atlantis was such a small community with a healthy rumor mill. By the time he reached Shepard's quarters, he thought of a million reasons not to have this conversation after all. Maybe he could find something small he was mad about, and then just Shepard would get off his back. He could just tell Woolsey he talked to Shepard and leave it there. He paced the quarter for a few minutes, considering the options. At last, he waved his hand over the chime and entered. Shepard raised a curious eyebrow. How'd it go with Woolsey? Exactly as expected. I'm on mandatory leave for 3 days, and he's making me see the shrink. Ouch. Yeah, could be worse, I suppose. Actually, this is kind of going to be worse. So how exactly did one go about saying, "You're my best friend and mean the world to me, but I also kind of hate the way you treat me"? Maybe meditation with Woolsey made better sense after all. Okay, Shepard straightened, clearly bracing himself. I'm listening. Rodney wrung his hands, pacing back and forth. Hypothetically, if one of your Marines were to insult me over and over, even though I told him to stop, what would you do? Give him a good dressing down and then send him to extra training sessions with Ronan. He'd probably get the worst assignments for a while. What if that didn't stop it? I'd send him back to Earth. Why? Is one of my men... I said hypothetically. Right. And if someone deliberately brought Citrus near me? Back to Earth. No chances for a second mistake. Then why did you give Colonel Mitchell a lemon? He used it on me, you know. Bet you thought that was hilarious. What? That was 2 years ago, Rodney. Shepard shrugged, though he had the good sense to look a bit sheepish. It was a joke. Not a funny one, and not even a unique one. It's been 5 years, and you're supposed to be my closest friend, and yet sometimes you are the one who treats me the worst. Rodney stopped pacing long enough to glare at Shepard, willing for him to finally hear him out. Only Shepard had a confused expression, not unlike a trapped rat in an overly complicated maze. So this is about my lemon comment yesterday? I thought that was just, you know, what we do. It's not, or at least it shouldn't be, Rodney snapped. Then biting his lower lip, he began to pace again. I like bantering with you. I like debating movies and racing cars. I like working through the impossible, but I do not like it when you comment on my weight, or when you threaten me to get me to work faster, or when you get mad at me for not being perfect enough to get everything right all the time." Rodney drew a deep breath, then continued, "I care about you, John, but sometimes I wonder if we're really even friends, because there are times when you sure as hell don't act like it." The words spilled out quickly, much too quickly for him to stop them. Now they were out and there was no taking them back, and maybe that was okay, actually. John needed to hear him out, and it couldn't just be half measures meant to protect feelings. This had to be real and honest, even if that totally and completely sucked. "You can't mean that. Rodney, you're my best friend. You know that." Rodney pushed his anger down, wishing John's quarters were larger for pacing. Seriously, why did he have to choose the smallest room in all of Atlantis? Rodney thought his next words through carefully, almost not saying them, because his friendship with John was everything, the best thing, except when it wasn't. And it hurt that it really was coming to this, but Woolsey was right. The wounds couldn't be left to fester more than they already had, which is why I told you this was going to be a hard conversation. "I'm done, John. If this doesn't stop, I'm just done." "What's that supposed to mean?" Rodney didn't hesitate. He spoke plainly, clear and determined, meeting John's eyes in complete seriousness. "Woolsey will probably give you an official reprimand, and this time I won't ask him to hold off. And honestly, I might request a different team. As I said, I'm done." At this, John froze. For once, he didn't tap his fingers or bounce on his toes. The man, always in perpetual motion, just sat there, staring, dumbfounded, clearly at a loss. "You're serious?" John finally managed to ask in disbelief. "You really don't get how much this can hurt, do you? I spent my whole childhood being bullied, insulted, and mocked for being different. The last thing I need is for those I care about to bully me as well." Rodney purposely lowered his voice before continuing. "I want to be close friends with you, John. I do. But I can't keep doing this if you won't respect me. I tried so hard to ignore it and just pretend it's all fine, but it's not. It's really not. At least if I leave the team, we can try and salvage our friendship."
"So this is what, an ultimatum?"
"Yeah, I suppose so. So the ball's in your court now. Are you willing to admit it's a problem? Will you work on it?" Tangled in his emotions, John looked upset, angry, unsure, and lost. His hazel gaze held so much confusion and awkwardness. At last he spoke, stumbling over most of the words. "For you to storm out yesterday and go into hiding, you must have been really upset. I didn't realize. I mean, I guess you've said it before, but I didn't. Look, I'm sorry." John straightened, his voice no longer wavering. "Let's just figure this out together. Help me to figure out where the line is, and I'll do my best not to cross it. Will you listen?"
"Rodney, your friendship means a lot to me. I'm not good at expressing these things, which you know, but please let me fix this."
"That's exactly what I'm trying to let you do. I know you don't do feelings, but I do appreciate you hearing me out." An awkward silence ensued. Then John's eyes showed a different set of feelings, a new resolve making its way through. He straightened.
"Yeah, about that."
"About what?"
"Feelings."
"What about them?"
"Look, I know I messed up, and I'm going to work on it. I am. But just as long as we're clearing the air here and saying stuff, I have something I want to get off my chest, too."
"You do?" Rodney asked. Now he was the one bracing himself, wondering what he could possibly have done wrong.
"Rodney, when we say we're best friends, I need you to understand something," John said.
He stopped, licked his lips for a moment, then drew a deep breath. He looked up, then down, then back up, finally meeting Rodney's eyes.
It's more than that."
John trembled, his breathing shallow, as he added, "You're everything to me." Floored, Rodney felt himself now also trembling, unsure this could be real. Before Rodney could respond, John said, and the fact I've hurt you badly enough that you'd consider that you'd be done with the team? Maybe even us? Damn it, I can't. John grew silent, looking down once more, staring at his hands as his fingers fidgeted with one another. Rodney glanced at his watch. Somehow it was already 10:55 hours, which meant he really needed to be leaving for his required therapy session. But John looked at such a loss. There was no way Rodney could leave now. He took a seat by John, nudging into him much the way John had nudged into him the day before. "I'm here. I'm listening," Rodney said. "I love you," John said, swift and panicked, almost inaudible, as though the words were hot embers tossed quickly outward to avoid burning him from within. Now it was Rodney's turn to freeze. Of all the ways he'd expected this conversation to go, this was certainly not it. He'd expected indignant John or denial John, and maybe even hope for apologetic John. But instead he got this? "You what?" Rodney asked. Sure, he must have misheard, or at the very least misunderstood. "I love you," John said again, this time a little louder, somewhat slower. "And now I realize I've been a jerk to you, and I'm sorry. I'll do whatever I have to do to make it up to you. I will. And I don't need you to share my feelings, but I think it's time you knew the truth." "Oh." It was all Rodney could think to say. He glanced again at his watch, noting that it was now 1100 hours, and he'd definitely be hearing from Woolsey soon, which made for just about the most rotten timing possible. It wasn't that Rodney hadn't noticed John's feelings. It was just that he'd been so sure he'd been imagining them, that it was simply too good to be true. Yet it turned out they were very much real, and it was those very feelings that made everything else hurt so much. Rodney also cared for John deeply, and it hurt when John treated him so badly, because it meant whatever there was between them was also at times toxic, painful. Except it didn't have to be. Rodney nudged into John again, and John nudged back into him, using their silent conversation to say that everything would be okay, that they had an understanding of sorts. What that understanding was, however, Rodney couldn't say. Then sure enough, his radio chirped. "McKay here. Dr. Bevins tells me you're late for your appointment," Woolsey said. "Yeah, see, about that, this is really bad timing. Perhaps you need me to refresh your memory on the meaning of the word mandatory. I'm in Shepherd's quarters now. We're talking." "Ah, I see. I'll ask Dr. Bevins to move your appointment to 11:30 hours then. Sergeant Blake will meet you at Shepherd's door to make sure you arrive on time. Woolsey out." "Great. I just earned an escort to therapy," Rodney groaned. "Sorry. How much more trouble can I get in, really? Anyway, did you actually just tell me you love me?" He couldn't have heard right. Surely his ears were playing jokes on him. Shepherd shook his head no, then nodded yes, clearly unsure. "Maybe," he finally said. No, you said it. I refuse to unhear it." "Listen, I'd do anything for you, Rodney. I'd go through hell and back. I can't bear to lose you, especially if I'm losing you because of something I did. Because I hurt you. So I'm glad you let me know what was wrong so I can stop fucking up and do better in the future. I'm sorry." "We'll work through this," Rodney said. I need you to understand, and now you finally do. And I needed you to know how I felt. And now I do. Yeah. Rodney couldn't process exactly where this could lead them. They'd somehow gone from "I'm mad at you" and thinking of maybe even no longer being your teammate, to "I love you," which seemed like such a ridiculously insane turn of events that Rodney felt sure he must have been dreaming. Only it felt right, too. Clearing the air, so to speak, had a way of easing the hurt while introducing new possibilities. He'd kept these feelings in so long, so sure they'd never be allowed to be shared, but somehow John, of all people, had finally opened up. "I do too, you know," Rodney said. "Do what?" "I love you." Then before he even knew what he was doing, he leaned forward and pressed his lips gently against John's. He thought it would be a brief kiss at first. This made the most sense as John stiffened, not returning the kiss at all. It seemed kissing John may have been too forward, too soon. So Rodney moved to pull back just as John wrapped his arms around Rodney, pulling him closer, gently opening his lips, then closing them again, only to continue the cycle over and over. The kiss might have lasted 5 minutes or a year. Rodney would have believed either. It felt good and right, like a kiss from someone who did feel and who did love. Finally, after so long, John had chosen to let Rodney in, and it felt wonderful.
When they did break off, they met each other's gazes only for a moment before both looking away.
"So that just happened?" Rodney asked. "Yeah, Rodney, that just happened. You okay with it?"
"Yes, I actually have been wanting to do that for a while."
"Me too."
Their eyes met again and they stared at each other, neither really moving, both processing. Rodney thought briefly of going in for another kiss, but then he thought of the Marine escort soon to arrive at the door and thought better of it. If he kissed John again, he'd want to do more, and John might want to do more, and that just completely blew his mind that they'd somehow arrived at a place where either of them might be thinking of doing anything at all. Rodney stood and moved back to pacing, if only to distract himself. "I'll let Woolsey know we worked things out. Hopefully that'll be enough for him. Ugh, I so don't want to go to therapy today, and he put me on forced leave for 3 days. Can you believe it? 3 days! I can't not work for 3 days!
You realize we were just kissing, right?"
"Yes, obviously."
"And you're already on to the next thing?"
"It's how my brain works, you know that."
"I love your brain," John said. And he said it so earnestly and without any hesitation that Rodney stopped in his tracks, tilted his head, and then smiled.
"I love you too," Rodney said,
and it didn't feel nearly as weird or difficult as it had before. The door chimed, and sure enough, Sergeant Blake was on the other side, ready to whisk him away.
"See you tonight?" Shepard asked.
"Yeah, tonight," Rodney agreed before leaving, his smile wide and genuine. The end.